Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Indigenous Vision Podcast, or Ivy Podcast, as we like to call it. On this special episode, we are reconvening with some of our organizers, presenters, speakers, homies from the MMIW Women's Empowerment Retreat that went down in Pasco just a couple of weeks ago by the time you're hearing this recording. And we are still reeling. We had a previous podcast. If you haven't checked it out, we went over the details and we talked a little bit about our experience as organizers and how uplifting it was and how amazing it was to meet all these women in Washington and all the Washington tribes that were there. But now we have Kola Shippentower with us today, and we would love to hear from you. You blew me away with your emceeing and facilitating. Like, it was so off the dome and you're just so sharp and amazing. What was your experience like, first of all?
Oh my gosh. So for you to say that, really, it means the world to me. And just like we were talking about before, where everybody's feeling like we're kind of like floating, we're still kind of on this high. And whoever even thinks of that when they're coming from either like a conference or symposium or things like this, especially around such a heavy topic. So for people to feel like they have that refreshing energy, like they're rejuvenated, that's what we were going for, right? That's what we really wanted. So I'm feeling that. I know we've been talking about other people that were in attendance are also feeling that way. But man, I'm going to be honest with you. This was actually my first experience doing kind of the emceeing / hosting. And I feel like, and this speaks to the level of organization that we had going on within this event from day one, from when you guys first got a hold of me all the way up to even today, and I'm sure going on, is that it felt so organic and natural for it to happen that way. And you ladies, honestly, to allow the flexibility, the freedom to be able to do that, we don't get that in a whole lot of events, especially within the MMIW movement. There's a lot of different organizations that are very like cutthroat about certain stipulations, certain rules about how these events are going to go. Your time is only here. You can't say this. You can't do this. You got to look like this, sound like this. So for you ladies to provide this space, even for me, like as being one of the other organizers, I didn't feel like another organizer because it was really just that natural and free to be able to organize with you ladies and get this all planned out. But yeah, that was my first experience doing something like that. And so I really appreciate the compliments. I'll share this little bit with you because I tell you, I talked to my Tota, my dad, about everything, especially within this movement, just to ensure that he's okay with what I'm doing in this realm. So I was talking to him last night and he was like, well, I'm really glad that people are, you know, recognizing you and wanting you in their space and letting us have our voice within this work. But it sounds like you've basically become a professional BSer. And it's funny because he says BSer meaning somebody that likes to talk. And I'm like, yeah, they're even paying me for it now. And he's like, all right, well, it's about time. But I mean, that goes into speaking on some of the things we might touch on. But it's just, it's been really impactful, not just only for me coming off of this event, but also for my family to kind of hear the response and how well it went. But man, you can see I'm excited. I don't want to stop talking about it. It was an amazing, amazing 2 days.
It was so amazing. I am still like that commenter floating and high from the whole experience because there's just little moments that keep coming back and talk about like triggering and making an imprint. Like I'm getting good memories. And so like, I think that's a really key point to healing is to sandwich it in between something extremely supportive and then something not just like supportive in like, I'm a mental health behavioral specialist and I'm here for you. Here's a 1-800 number. It's in like I felt like we experienced some genuine sisterhood that people were actually kind of surprised at women wanting each other to do better. And Kola, nobody would ever know that it was your first time because like I think you came out the gate swinging. And I don't know if you all know that this is the future MVP of many many things, many organizations, because she killed it with our event was not a first time person doing it. I think what you did was like NFL league doing a sports camp. I'm paid millions and I'm here for you, youth, but I think you did better than that because of the feeling that we all got as participants and as organizers. And so, yeah, I appreciate the non-combative, like healing-centered approach, even in planning it all together, because I think the tone and the mindset and the vibe that we create as organizers really trickles into the community, because whether or not you like it or not, whenever you get up to say anything about anything, there's so few people in our communities that you are a role model and a leader, and there are youth listening to what you say. So it's really important to think about what we say, but it was just amazing. I've heard, you know, that some of the girls never had real friends, and I think about the safety of the women in our community and how there's nobody there for us but us. And so when we get together with these events and we center them on prevention, because I'm all, and this is the second time I'm saying this today, is that I really want our society and our communities to be preventative management. I think the investment and all of our dollars should be going into prevention, because when it comes to the crisis, there's too few of us and our cultures are so stretched thin and our cultural leaders are so stretched thin that we need all of us here. There's too few of us to lose even just one. And so I don't ever want to be in crisis management. And I feel like that the whole MMIW person relative movement and epidemic is crisis management. And it's still not even getting the light of day that it deserves in certain parts of the country. Oh, I just got really serious there. So, but that's kind of how the event goes, you know, like we can share some really heavy stuff and there's a lot of pretty crazy statistics, but just listen to the episode before this one. And there's that clip of the women in their icebreaker activity. That's phenomenal laughter at any event. And I just, it does something to my heart to hear. It's a frequency of pure joy. And I get emotional talking about it. I'll be quiet now.
Suta said it so perfectly right there. And I think that was something that we did experience, all of us within that space, was seeing the transformation of some of the attendees showing up, probably showing up like what they're accustomed to these sort of events, especially when we're talking about MMIWP, which is very serious, very heavy, sometimes angry, very often sad, almost depressed. This energy that we kind of carry with us within this work, because that's the heart of it. That's the harsh reality of this, why it's even happening. So when attendees are showing up, but we saw this happening even on day one, the transformation to the end of the day where there's laughter and there's smiling and there's goofiness and there's silliness, it was a really good reminder even for me that even in this dark, scary reality that Indigenous women are facing, there is still that strength and resiliency that we naturally carry within us, which is our sense of humor and our brightness and our laughter. Yeah, Kasuta said it. When you hear it, you can hear it within like the aunties and the grandmas that were showing up. And you're like, that's exactly why we're able to do what we're doing today, is because we have that in our bloodline. Like that's come so naturally. So then by the second day, we were able to tap into a little bit more of what most people are accustomed to in these certain areas, but we were able to kind of touch on it in a different way with people remembering their loved ones and celebrating them and honoring them. But yeah, just seeing the amount of, you know, people kind of childlike almost in how they were moving and talking, that's healing within itself. Because sometimes I think when we're in this, we get way too hung up in the making sure we hold ourselves in a certain way, where I'm like, well, I kind of want to be playful. I want to play around, because this is like, it's too heavy too often, where I think we forget to have that lightheartedness sometimes and remember that we are all healing in one way or another. And laughter seems to be the best medicine for a lot of us.
I think that's the culturally appropriate way. And that this event was proof of it, is that there is a way to laugh through the pain while you're healing. And that was really cool to see. And this was multidimensional healing. I was seeing families of survivors or families of currently missing, able to laugh and move, like you said, in silly childlike ways, and then not feel tokenized or exploited. And so I'm really sensitive to that because I've been working in the environmental and social justice field for so long that I feel like if you have really strict funding restrictions, then it really dictates the way the event goes. And this didn't have those restrictions from the funder. It was just general funding for women in Washington. And so based on our experiences of moving women in and out of Washington, around Washington, saving them from domestic violence, being there to map the murdered missing people in their communities, I felt like we still were missing the mark on our connection to each other. And then also having been a victim of multiple burnouts, of overworking myself, of being tokenized, of being asked to speak about environmental and social injustices just over and over, and oftentimes without pay, no care for my mental health, anything like that. I think this really set a different environment up for healing in the way that we should be healing as Indigenous people. And I think historically, our communities were always centered around laughter and then pushing through it, or making a joke, or making an origin story where there's a comical character taking on this moral lesson that we're supposed to take in. But it's just amazing. I can go on and on and on forever too. And I don't know if I can stop talking. My calendar didn't give me a break. I don't think the two of yours did either. And so like, I'm like maybe 8 or 9 meetings in since the retreat and a couple of presentations, but it's still hanging on me very heavily. And it's kind of like there, and I'm kind of thinking it's like the role in my head that keeps playing, where all these little memories at the house and at the self-defense center. What a phenomenal event. And I hope that we get to take the steering wheel more like that. And I hope more communities, I think each state needs at least one event just like that. And some states are so huge, they need to. But that, it was really nice in planning. We have general funds and we get our MMIW money on an annual basis because our programs are women and girl focused. This Washington Share Funders group gave us some MMIW money, and it really took our planning to like a stressless level. Like, this is what happens when women are given money and they don't have to have those basic things worried or stressed over. We were really able to come together as planners. And I think that trickled out into the other organizers and the speakers and the workshop leaders. And it was a vibe that trickled into all of the participants. And that's really what you want. You want leadership leading by example. So I don't think any of the participants can say that they felt tension between us or like there's like something happening, because there just isn't. And it's really cool. Like, as I can start crying at that too, because, you know, I think every woman needs to experience real sisterhood and a woman having her back over thousands of miles, no matter where you're at. It's a very cool feeling. So if I could pray today for anything, that would be it. So poof, that blessings out into the country. Is that funny?
It was pretty amazing. Yeah, it was amazing to not only have just all women organize it, but Wesley Cooper was like the one guy who was a part of it, and he was non-Indigenous. And Cola, you touched on a really great thing with everybody on how we need to collaborate with people in this movement. Yeah. I wanted you to share just a little bit more about that and how it's important, because they can reach different areas that we can't.
Having these allies, that's essentially what allies are. I don't think that when we're talking about allies, we're talking about other Indigenous people. I really don't think that's what we're trying to define it. I mean, so people are probably thinking like, oh, when they're checking off boxes for registration or paperwork, they're like advocates and allies, but nobody really thinks about who allies are. Even in my own journey within this movement, I've been trying to figure that out for myself. And I'm like, they're right here. These are my friends. These are my training partners. These are people who see me and understand where I come from and the things that I'm trying to work through, are telling me every single training practice, like, you're one of the best. You're amazing. And I love having you here. And you help me become a better version of myself. Like, regardless of all the challenges and obstacles you face, like, I appreciate you. And that right there is allyship. That's what we're looking for. Having someone like Wes Cooper, who is an amazing athlete. I mean, this is a guy who gets to travel all over the country and compete on the highest level of jiu-jitsu. He was able to come into a space with many indigenous women. And I mean, we're not easy to deal with. I mean, we had like sisters and cousins and nieces and aunties and grandmas. You know, we're going to give each other a hard time, especially a guy if he shows up in that space. But the way he showed up was absolutely like almost effortless. And I think it speaks volumes to the type of person that he is, the type of human being that he is, but also the type of energy that he was exuding to make the participants, making our aunties feel safe and that they were okay to connect with him. It's having connections like that, which is really going to help within this movement. I think we've been trying for way too long to kind of fist in the air, like, excuse my language, because this is really the only way I think people can see it, is kind of like fuck the white man sort of thing. And it's hard because not all of us are in that point. We're not really coming off of like our survival story and coming at every sort of person that doesn't look like us, move like us, sound like us in a negative sort of way. Because some of us have had really positive experiences with non-native people where we're like, you know, they want to help us. I will admit that Wes was a little, I won't really say hesitant, but he was a little skeptical. He was kind of like, what is this, Cola? What are we doing? Is it jujitsu? Is it a native thing? And he had all the questions, all the right questions, I think, too, because he's got to protect his space as well. But he had all the right questions. And I'm like, man, I know I'm not local 24/7, so it's hard for us to connect and have a conversation. But like, let's meet via Zoom. I can give you all the information. And it was just really hard to connect because our schedules are so all over the place. But a good friend of mine, Heather, who also trains at Siri headquarters and at Wes's gym, she's a blue belt. She's also representing for, you know, us heavyweight women. So, I mean, her and I have really been able to connect on a lot of different levels. She herself is also a survivor. And she was very adamant about, like, Cola, I'll go talk to Wes. I'm going to talk to Wes. I'm going to let him know, like, this is important. We need to do this. We need to hold space for your people. So, those two were really instrumental in providing the space and the venue. I mean, Wes's gym is beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. I've been wanting to hold an event at that gym for so long. And for it to finally happen, I'm like, oh, yes, like this is going to be perfect. But to have Heather be right there and be such an ally and trying to nudge him, like, come on, we got to do this. I swear, like, Cole knows what she's doing. Like, she's not just some sort of badass that's out here competing all over the country with you. Like, she's also doing some other things. So, we got to do this. And it is really important to have friends like that, to have family like that, because they're going to be able to reach areas that we can't. I am not blinded to the fact that someone who looks like me and sounds like me isn't going to be able to get into certain spaces because of other people's negative connotations of our people, especially within this work. You know, they hear MMIW, they see the red handprint, they see the pictures with the sisters with their fists up in the air, and they see the anger, the hurt, and frustration. So when they already have that in their mind, unfortunately, it's going to be really hard for them to want to hear from us on any other level. But when we have friends who are willing to kind of, I mean, they don't want to do the work. They really don't. When you find a good ally, a good friend, they don't want to do the work. They don't feel it appropriate to be the ones to do the work, but they do kind of want to help pick the lock on the door and be like, I'm going to get you in here. I'm going to get you in. And I absolutely welcome it because things like this happen. Like we saw it happen. I really don't think that without having friends like this willing to do that, we would have been able to have find such an amazing, beautiful space to have held this event in, unfortunately. I mean, it's my big dream to be able to have a gym like that at some point. It's just not happening right now. But I have friends who have spaces like that. But I think that's something other advocates, other organizers, and family members can remember and think of like, okay, like let's be realistic about this. Who can I reach to and who can't I reach to? But do I know someone that can? And I mean, that even goes into the different facets of organizing events like this, funding, promoting, marketing, all these different things. We have people who are willing to help in those areas, and I think we should definitely utilize those connections. I really don't see it as appropriating. I don't see it as tokenizing in any sort of way when you have true friends that are wanting to help in that sort of way. But also vice versa. I mean, non-Native people are relying heavily on Indigenous people to advocate for a lot of different things that they also find important. Natural resources. I mean, Suti, you can speak to that one, but I mean, there's going to be non-Native people that reach out to us as allies. And how beautiful is that to be able to reciprocate that energy where we kind of recognize like, oh, you need me. You need me now. So let me help you out because I look and sound the way that I do, but I'll help you out because we're good buddies like that. But yeah, it's beautiful. And I think it's an amazing shift that we're kind of reaching to. And it kind of goes hand in hand with what Suta was talking about. We're due. Rent is due. Like, we should be compensated for this work. I know that there's a lot of other family members and advocates and organizations that are very much like, we don't need your money. We don't need it. But I'm like, why though? Because this organization, this big government agency or state organization is going to pay somebody who has the credentials, the diplomas, the degrees, is going to pay them an absurd amount of money. And they lack relevance. They don't know what it's like to be within this. They don't know what the hurt feels like. They don't know the pain, but because they have the credentials, they're going to get paid up the butt. Like, they're going to pay so much money as opposed to having somebody who's actually from this community and experiencing this and has the relevancy. You need to get paid. It's not getting paid for the stories that you're telling. It's not, like, no amount of money will ever bring our loved ones back, but we should be getting fairly compensated for the work that we bring, because telling our stories, providing the resources and the different modalities of healing that we've been able to experience and want to share with other people, especially our relatives. If you have funding within organizations that are offering it up, man, take it. You need to be compensated. You need to have your travel taken care of. You need to have your lodging. It is too much of this mindset of I got this that has really slowed down this movement. I really think that if we were coming off like the 80s and 90s, and I had people like my dad and my uncles who are in these positions of speaking, who were able to say, I'm worth a lot more than $20 for gas. If they had that supporting them along the way, I think we'd be a lot further now. It's okay though, because now we're coming up on this time. But I strongly encourage advocates and families, man, your experience, your story is worth way more than a tank of gas and a couch to sleep on. You definitely should be asking for the appropriate accommodations and being compensated for your time and energy. And honestly, if you're working with organizations or state agencies who aren't willing to pay, you shouldn't be working with them, because that right there is appropriation. That's tokenizing. That's saying, they'll take the bare minimum because that's what they're so used to. We're on this come up right now and we're starting to pick it up. But allyship and compensation are two big things that I think a lot of us are starting to tap into. And we're like, the time is now. Rent is due. Let's go. Let's continue on with that and helping maybe our elders, maybe our aunts aren't quite on that point, but trying to tell them like, you can do it too. But that was definitely something that came together within this event, trying to see. And I think that's what some of the other attendees who are also organizers were kind of like, oh, like I should be. Okay. And it was really a cool thing. And I really do appreciate Wes and Heather and Samantha and all the other people who came into that event that were so willing to hold space with us and engage also. I mean, Wes was like doing powwow yoga with Acacia Red Elk. I mean, how often does that happen? And I can't wait to talk with him to be like, dude, because he was still like in a whirl. Like after the event, we were trying to talk and catch up, but he was still very much like, what just happened? Like, wait a minute. But I'm really excited about catching up with him now that he's kind of had some time to decompress and be like, whew, that just happened. But it was amazing.
It was so amazing. And the power of allies, I don't think we can speak enough about it. Everything you just said is cultural humility and mutually beneficial relationships and mirroring the community you serve. I don't think we necessarily mirrored the community we served. We were just empowered community members who threw an event for our community members. And so it's a little bit better than mirroring the community you serve, which is a culture humility best management practice. Melissa, I feel like you should say something because you, Indigenous Vision is rolling along in the environmental programs and culture humility. Melissa held this event down from beginning to end. It was also your first in-person sort of event that you've ever done. And I don't think I worked with newbies in any way with between Cola and Melissa. Like
Right.
there was nothing, there was no like super learning curve that was extremely steep and stressful to get through. Nothing.
Okay, before Melissa goes off, because I want to hear what she has to say. I do have to say that having someone like Melissa, if I ever get into a street fight, I want her to have my back, because she could let like anything slide without being taken care of, and she's also going to be like right there. But it was amazing, because it felt like all the little things that we all kind of forget within these events, she was taking care of it. She wore every single hat at that event, and it allowed for, personally for me, to be able to give 110% within what area that I was kind of covering, which we're talking about emceeing and hosting, which I'm still trying to like latch on to. But it allowed for me to be able to give 110%, and it allowed for a lot of our attendees to not feel like they were missing something, because she was right there. She had this or she had that. She had this. She made sure. She was even doing like the last minute runs to Walmart for me, where I'm like, I forgot this. I need this. And she was boom on it. And you don't get that in a lot of events. You get some people that are kind of like, I got you if you need anything. And then it's kind of like a, oh, well, I couldn't go and get that exactly, but we have this. Can this work? Melissa, you made this event run so seamlessly and so effortlessly. I don't think that we. It's going to be talked about for years, I think, is just your ability to be able to support people from the background, and just how humble you are within that, to where, and I'm gonna say this, because I don't think that you were looking for any sort of like credit or attention on it. I don't get that from you. You don't have that kind of heart. You generally want to be there to love and support other people. But girl, when you walked into a room, like people turned and looked like, who's that? I want to know her. Because you bring a very amazing and beautiful big vibe, where people want to be like, hi, like, what are we doing? And you definitely brought it in all different areas. And I just have to say, I love you for that. It was amazing. And I can't ever imagine going to another event and trying to do anything without you right there with me. I'm just going to need you to come along and be my right there, my buddy for everything that I do moving forward.
Right, Melissa is such a badass friend, and she does make you fight your codependency, but at least like she's the friend who you can acknowledge it and talk about it with. So I love you, Melissa.
Thank you. Wow, that's like a huge compliment, because I felt like I was at the beginning. I was like, I don't know what to expect. I was confiding in Suta. I was like, Suta, I'm really nervous. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know how things are going to go. And then the day of, it just all came together, and that's just the personality that I am. I got eyes on everything and everyone, and I took it very seriously, because these events are very serious to me, and I've been doing them for a while, but this is the first time I had to actually like coordinate stuff. And thankfully, you guys, or Cola, you really had the presenters come in and do their thing. Like, you hooked us up with these amazing speakers and demonstrators and the venue in general. And it was just a whirlwind. And I just kind of let myself go with it. I really wanted everything to be fluid. Like you said, no crazy restrictions. We had a pretty loose agenda. We stayed on track. We got everybody in to do whatever they needed to do. The masseuse did her thing, the photographer did their thing. And it was just a matter of just keeping eyes on everybody and supporting, like genuinely supporting you as the facilitator, because I knew you and Suta would probably get a lot of speaking time, right? But I wanted to make sure that everything was just okay, because the last thing you want to do in an environment like that is like worry about stuff. And as you know, my hardcore Virgo energy like showed up during this event. And yeah, when I came back, I had all these crazy papers with like scribbles, and everything was just everywhere, receipts, and it was really wild. But like we said, we somehow got it together, and it was really amazing how it just all the pieces fit. Everything flowed nicely. Everybody loved everything. Even the vibe of like the seriousness to the playfulness was an amazing balance. So it was really amazing to be a part of. So thank you for that. And I want to thank all my previous experience doing events, because that was really a test of like, what can I handle? And I am so looking forward to the next one, because I'm ready for it. I am ready.
But man, and you know, even after this event that we had, like Wes is like, I think we need to make this a thing, Cola. He's like, would you guys want to do make this like a yearly thing, like a
Oh my
yearly
God, an
retreat?
annual event would be amazing.
Yeah,
I feel
I'm
that'd be
like,
amazing.
And this time is like perfect because
It
it's
would.
honestly my feeling moving from this event. I started having a lot of people, obviously, like the attendees were like, you need cola, get cola here, do this. And then my sister has me signed up for a bunch of stuff. And usually, like this time last year, I'd be like, oh, I have so much to do. I've got to be all over the place and do this and do that. But this retreat did exactly what it was supposed to do for me because I've been feeling like I'm so busy, but I'm excited because this is what we are in for a reason. And it's exciting that we're making progress and we're doing things and saving the angry, frustrated energy for the events that need it, which are going to be, I have one coming up where I get to actually speak to attorneys and judges and law enforcement. And I'm kind of like, I get to bolster all that energy and save it for them. Whereas I get all of this feel good love energy to the Indigenous like community events that I'm going to. So I don't bring that like fighter energy to those because nobody in those spaces were ever fighting. I think that's what we didn't get that at all at this event, where usually when you come to conferences or whatever, you're kind of looking at each other like side eyeing, like why is she here? Like why what are her intentions? Why is she even telling her story sort of thing? And I didn't get that at all at this event. And you know, we had a lot of ladies who are within community with each other. Like we had people from the valley that were like, oh, you're here. Oh, okay. Yeah, you too. And it didn't feel like there was any sort of tension or anything like that between them. And I mean, Mimi-Poos and people from the valley don't get along very well. And they were all in the same room. And it
I
was
would
like,
have never known.
I'm
I
like looking
didn't.
like, are they going to be okay? Yeah, there's some tribes around here, just given histories between the tribes that get kind of like, oh, well, you're Nimiipuu. That's why you are the way that you are. So just little like things like that. And it didn't happen at all. And I'm like, yay, we're all getting along. And oh, like you Matillas were usually over here, like, I'm just here. Like y'all can fight it out and I'll just be here. But we get blamed for everything still. Because like Nimiipuus be fighting with like Yakubas and be like, even though they did it wrong, they'll look at us and be like, well, you guys just stood there and didn't do anything. We weren't involved. It happens on like a government level all the way down to just being at basketball tournaments. It's crazy, but I didn't feel any of that at the event and it just felt really, really good. I'm just like, why can't we have this everywhere we go?
Wow, if there
I
is an
know.
opportunity to make that an annual event, then I'm down because that would literally do what it did for you is it would take all of that planning or what's next or okay, how do I one up that? Like all of that energy out of what's happening next year now. And if we got this as an annual event, I don't see it happening at a different location right now, so I would be so down to have it at Wes's because it's a really central hub, and I think it was a pretty easy area for people to fly into as well. And
Yeah, but
we want to be in places where women are experiencing that trafficking.
yeah, I didn't know if you guys had seen on the map of that was posted. I think it was by Yakima Nation. They posted a list of truck stops within Idaho, Washington, and Oregon to avoid. Indigenous women, if you're traveling alone or with your kids, avoid these truck stops. And one of the truck stops in Pasco is actually over on the other side of the airport. And that's a huge one. And I've always felt that way. Whenever I go through there, I'm like, this is such a weird truck stop. Like it's old school 80s vibe. I'm like, this is disgusting. But that truck stop made the list, and I didn't know that that one would.
So we are back reflecting on the MMIW Women's Empowerment Retreat that we had in the Tri-Cities area in Pasco, Washington, early April. By the time you're listening to this, we are heading towards the end of April, which is just madness. But we were really going into how much we loved the presentation and demonstration from the Elizabeth Smart Foundation that Mia Strong brought, the Smart Defense. Before we get into your official reflection, just for anybody who's listening who has no idea what you represent, could you just give us a little bit of a background on what you do? Because it's so amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so Smart Defense came about for really a gap in the industry, in the self-defense industry. I feel like there were some things that we could be doing better. And the first would be to have all coaches be trauma-informed trained, because with the statistics nationally and especially within the Indigenous populations, the likelihood of having a large group of your students be survivors is, you know, very, very high. So having that trauma-informed piece is really what I felt was missing for a lot of self-defense courses. We are also female-led, which is very important, I feel like, but we do incorporate male coaches for a variety of reasons. One, not only do our students need to realize that there are really safe, good men out there, but they also need to have a realistic view of what those physical techniques are, because close to 100%, honestly, it's 98%, so really close to 100% of all perpetrators are men. It's important that you train with that physicality in mind. And so we do have half of our staff are these incredibly safe, wonderful, badass men that have a very strong why as to why they're there coaching. And their whys are usually because they are survivors, they know a survivor, or they love a survivor, meaning their wife, their daughters, you know, close friends, family members. So this really horrific epidemic to me of sexual violence is near and dear to every one of our coaches' hearts. So they have a strong why for why they are there coaching. And that comes through in the compassion and, you know, holding space for people, but also creating an opportunity for everybody to be brave and courageous and to face fears and to do things that are very uncomfortable in a very safe environment, so that when, you know, they're out in the real world, they go away with this piece of empowerment and confidence and a really deep sense of self-love and self-worth, because we do incorporate that. Our training is very holistic. We do a lot of breath work, meditation, self-reflection, self-awareness drills, using your voice. We go into the education surrounding sexual violence. And I think that holistic and whole overview package of self-defense is something I'm very, very proud of, and that we are kind of leading the way in the industry with that. I am starting to see other programs get that trauma-informed piece of training, which is makes me so happy. There's no competition. I want everybody that's out there coaching to have the skill set that we have, because it is such a important and humbling role to take to help these women.
That's so important. I think that's one of the sentences from the first day that I really took home with me, and I'm still thinking about it. And I'm thinking about, how do I trickle that sentence into everything that we're doing? You said it, and you said that, well, I'll probably get it wrong because I've been thinking about it in so many different directions, but we'll only fight for ourselves for as much as we value ourselves. And then I kind of went down the rabbit hole in that and thinking about how abused Indigenous women have been over the last, you know, 400 years or so, and what they've heard from federal government policies to IHS policies to abusive spouses and just society in general. Even thinking about, like, me and a coffee girl had a really great conversation in rural Montana this weekend. And she had a sticker in her shop that said, "Pay me like a mediocre white man." And and I was like, wow, I could never get away with this sticker in rural Montana, but you can as a white girl. And she laughed and she said, "Yeah, that's right." And I said, "I'd probably get beat up and have to use this self-defense I just learned." And like all of that value and worth reflection. And her and I shared the reflection that she makes 76 cents to a dollar. And then Native women are even worse. It's like 57 or 53 cents to a dollar. And so I'm like, wow, worth has so much to it. And we as women really do need to stick together to like up our value a little bit, because like the sisterhood I saw at this retreat was just amazing. It makes me so emotional. And then I tried to, you know, big sister everybody into like, everybody knows somebody from another state now, and we have the entire West covered, which is really empowering. And then how you spoke to the participants, I think, was very trauma informed. And then Leah also mentioned that culture humility, which is what Melissa and I work under, is a very trauma informed practice, which is not even blanket generalizing the trauma. Like each woman experiences something different. Well, they could go through the same scenario, but they'll perceive it different, right? And so we all have our own individual healing cycles for similar events. And so I really liked the idea that, you know, and the feeling that all of these women in all of their different stages, and, you know, when some of the questions were asked, we, all of the participants, had met violence and were survivors of something. And so it feels like more than 3 out of 5 women, or 2 out of 3 women, or, you know, the most current stat, when you look around a room and you ask an explicit question, like how many people have met violence or microaggressions, and everybody raises their hand. So I don't know. I feel like our on the screen stats are a little bit off compared to what we see in class, but, you know, we target these communities who have also encountered this violent community we live in.
Yeah. Well, and we know that there's so many reasons why women don't feel safe to report, not only just safe, but there's so many other reasons why women don't report. And so all of those numbers, I feel, are drastically lower than what reality is, because if we lived in a world where everybody felt safe enough or felt confident to ask for help and to report, then I think the world would be shocked. I don't think women would be shocked, but I think the world would be shocked by how just far-reaching sexual violence is.
Reflecting on the retreat itself, what was the experience for you as a presenter and someone who took the afternoon of the first day and just blew everybody's mind? What was your experience like?
Oh my gosh, it's going to make me cry. yeah, I touched on it a little bit in a social media post, but I love what I do. Like I completely own that I am so lucky and blessed that this is what I do for a living, and that I get to help push healing forward. But I really walked into that room and like was so overwhelmed, because the very first morning, watching the women interact and move, and watching, you know, Sutta and Kola kind of take over and run them through some different sharing exercises as well as body movement exercises, like I felt immediately that that room was special. That it was, yes, it was very, very heavy, I think, because we all realized that every single person in that room has massive amounts of experience with trauma, but I was just overwhelmed by the love too. Like there was so much love, the energy in that room was so powerful. And I myself was so honored from the moment I got the call or the DM from Kola to our meetings, to planning it, to actually walking in that room. Like I realized what a gift that was that you guys were giving me. I am not Indigenous. And so I, being able to be in that space was such a gift. And it really did change me, not only as a coach, but as a woman, as a human, as a minority. You know, I am, I do have a lot of Japanese and Hawaiian, you know, relatives. And I've always identified as the minority growing up in Utah, but I do realize also, like, I'm so privileged. And that's what I love about Elizabeth too, is she's always owned. Like, I realized the reason I had so much press and the reason I had so much, you know, law enforcement involvement is because of who I look like, right? I'm a white, blonde hair, blue-eyed girl from an affluent community. Like I understand that, and I want to do what I can to help others regardless of the situation, because she does have such a very large awareness of her privilege. She's used it for good. And I do feel like the retreat just opened my eyes, opened the foundation's eyes to the work that needs to be done and how we as supporters can push your initiatives forward and support you as a community, because man, the work that was being done was so powerful. And everything from the beginning of day one till I had to leave on the last day, I just was 110% present the whole time, soaking it up and learning. Like I learned a ton. I might've been there to teach, and I did teach my portion, but every single presenter I learned from, every single woman there I learned from, and gosh, it just will stick with me forever and ever and ever. Like I came home and just vomited on all my friends. I'm like, we did this and this happened. And oh my God. And I was crying the whole time. And then this happened and this song. And oh my gosh, it was so impactful. And it was such an honor to be a part of. And it just really humbled me to my core. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
It was such a beautiful event. And, you know, I'm seeing the ripples of where it was not held. And so for this event, we had money specifically for Washington women. And the focus was empowerment of Washington women. And I wanted to connect Washington women with women across the Western states to make our community larger. So when events happen, we have somebody within a couple hundred miles to call or come get us or go get somebody. And so, you know, the more women we have, the stronger we are together and the stronger our network is. And especially if we're all kind of under the same values of no competition and your life and your mental wellness is what's important to me. And so I really think those are really awesome combinations. And I'm still seeing posts today. I woke up to a post this morning that said Montana needs a retreat for MMIW women. And I'm like, yes, they do. Every single state needs a retreat exactly like this because it's not a fun movement to be a part of. And you don't want to have relatives or family members in this. It's kind of the worst nightmare movement you could possibly have for your community. And so I'm very motherly and I go in like a big sister and I want to protect, which is how self-defense comes in. I love that this event has attracted the attention of some funders because we need one of these in Montana, probably in Utah and Arizona. I know some great Washoe community members out in Utah that would love to attend and in Nevada too. Nevada is still going strong on the self-defense classes that Melissa was starting and being part of. And so I'm so excited for what the future holds. And I feel like this was a really good prototype event, especially when we come at it from trauma-informed, non-competitive, and explicitly anti-violent, like especially from the top to the bottom. We don't want any violence amongst the planners. We just have too much of it in the community. Our stories are full of it. And so we need to be able to balance our lives somehow and decompress from it. And so that's kind of what we're doing now with you. And I don't know if I'm, it's been a couple of weeks and I'm still trying to figure out, you know, it's not leaving me yet. And so if something's sticking around this long, I'm thinking, what should I do with it next? And how do I move this and make it bigger and better? And so there's a lot of things that Melissa and I went over to just how to make things safer and how to make things better and more relaxed from the planning to the participants. Thank you so much for everything you've done. And I just loved cruising around Washington State and into Oregon. We dipped into Oregon a little bit for the Sweat Lodge and it was everything, same for me. So the Sweat Lodge was a little bit worrisome for me because I've only been a family Sweat Lodge participant. And this group of women, Cola's uncle started the sweat for us and then he left and headed out somewhere and then just left us to the hot rocks and the steam and each other. And it was just a really great, safe experience that was healing all around. There was no... It's hard to get together a group of women and not have a little bit of animosity because of the scripting that this country and our society puts into us. And so I was really proud of the women, really proud of the planners and all of the participants. Even Kola was like, you know, we had Nimi Poo and Umatilla in the same room and there was no animosity. And I'm like, wow, that's I know that it's like Blackfeet and Crow being in the same room and having no old warfare tech tendencies come out. But
that sweat ceremony experience, it's still something I feel, and being allowed in that space. And then I loved, we had those two elders in there and I don't know, it was so special. Like I can't even put it into words how much I feel like I healed. And that was, I mean, I was going to support, to learn, to experience it. And I walked away just like a different person. I feel like something happened in there with that purging of everything and then sharing that space and listening to everybody. And man, I still only have talked about that, like details to that with just my inner circle because it just still feels sacred to me. So I think if we could ever incorporate that experience into whoever, you know, of course, consent-based, whoever's interested in that, wherever we take the retreat, that served a very, very tangible piece of healing for me personally. And I feel like everybody in that group felt the same thing.
Yeah, it was definitely amazing. And I've always been a big proponent of adding in culture into whatever kind of healing technique that you're doing. And so, you know, self-defense is not something that's, I don't know if it comes naturally or if it's taught. I'm trying to think like really fast on the spot here. Like, do we teach any kind of self-defense? And there's like kind of this, we don't really teach Indigenous self-defense. And so our value systems, I just love the way our value systems from the Indigenous culture, from the self-defense culture, and from the MMIW culture, all of these just married up into a like a perfect trifecta of everybody walking away with saying, wow, that was totally not what I expected. and it was amazing. It was amazing. And so I don't know what happened there, but it was magical. And so I think it's when you go in with like, okay, this is going to be energy sucking. It's going to be hard. I'm going to hear some hard stories. I'm going to have to, you know, physically exert myself. And then people don't expect to be laughing when they're physically exerting themselves, but for creating muscle memory, you have to break some old muscles. And the average woman is not regularly throwing a punch or blocking or wacha-ing anything, you know? And so like, it's, you know, wacha-ing is my, you know, it's a sound effect for me blocking. Yeah. But, you know, once we start doing those sound effects, yeah, I'm a sound effect person, but blocking and hitting and punching and mirroring each other and then reminding each other where our power comes from, all of these beautiful things happen to a woman, and something from our inner child to our older generations and our ancestors starts to heal. And it's just an amazing experience that I'm really looking forward to bringing to other states and hopefully sooner than later. How do we get this podcast out more? I'm just so honored to meet you, Mia. And I've been on your Instagram looking at your career. And you've had an amazing, amazing career as a fighter. And I'm just so impressed at what our human bodies can do. It's just a magical time. It must be springtime and everything's in bloom and flowering because I'm just impressed by life right now. And I'm finding a lot of gratitude in every corner that I'm looking into. And so I'm hoping that's infectious. And I'm hoping that when people hear about this event and the incredible people that were involved and the incredible activities that we had, that there's not animosity or jealousy or wishing or lack of. Just, I hope that there's patience and energy put towards like, okay, this is going to come to me soon, or it's going to be near me soon. And that you as an individual have the ability to make this event and put it on for yourself and your community next month if you wanted to. And so Indigenous Vision, I just want to remind everybody, will sponsor an instructor for your community or group event. If you're interested in providing something like this, you can customize it to your own community. We provide just a template agenda for a 90-minute class. We pay the instructor, and then you kind of do your own situational awareness with your community, specific and customized stats for your community. And then getting the instructor and the community together and then doing this all yourself is just an amazing experience. And so you can do it. We'll fund that. I want to partner a little bit more with the Elizabeth Smart Foundation and getting Smart Defense out. And so I've also been looking at our money and seeing where we can provide scholarships and sponsorships for that $300 course that's online that was from the pandemic. And I think that's really cool for women in rural communities that don't have people.
Yes. And that reminds me, I'm going to email you the link for every participant to have access to that online training. And then also it'll come with some really great books to read and some other suggestions, some other quick videos on breath work, things like that. So I'll get that to you. Thank you for that reminder. But yeah, we're the same way. Like our foundation, we're all for helping push your initiatives forward? How can we get you funding? How can we support you? And that if along the way, Smart Defense happens to be the right fit, we're happy to do that. But anything we can do, I'm really excited because it's so weird. And just how you were talking about like the spring and finding gratitude everywhere, like things are happening on my end. Like I just actually, I should have shared this before we even started recording, but I just got another email inquiry for a training in Montana with the indigenous populations there. And I, of course, was like, oh, is Suta on this email? Like I was looking, and if you're not on this email, you're going to get on the email and we're going to figure this out. And then hopefully with our grant writing support, we can just help spread this, you know, awareness and this opportunity, because it does take the in-person community building and that physical energy exchange to make a huge impact in a short amount of time. Yes, you can make an impact with online training and all those other great things and podcasts and things like that, but that in-person physically sharing and healing together really, I feel like, jumpstarts that trajectory.
Well, I gained another Shiro at the retreat. So you just blew me away, Mia. Like you really, really did. I had to reflect, and I also did some investigating. I was like, who is this badass woman? So for anyone who's listening, how can they learn more about what you offer? Where do they have to go to learn more or sign up?
Yeah. So ElizabethSmartFoundation.org is our website, and you can just click on the Smart Defense link. We do offer other programs as well. And then we have Instagram, Facebook for ESF_SmartDefense, or I'm just Utah Jits Mama. And then we also have it's just Elizabeth Smart Foundation on Instagram as well. Anyone needs like more information than that, reach out to me because I will help in any way possible.
Oh my goodness. I am so excited, everybody. I think it's going to be a beautiful spring and we have more self-defense coming towards you. So stay strong.
Thank you for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. This has been a very special episode, of course, brought to you with our friends from the Wasauza Project, Kola Shipping Tower, the badass personal safety coach repping the Umatilla Nation, and of course, Mio Strong from the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, who is the program director for the Smart Self-Defense. If you would like to contribute to our MMIW efforts, please visit our website, indigenousvision.org. You can make a donation there, and we will definitely get it out to our community members. Thank you again. Don't forget to follow us on social. We are on Facebook, Indigenous Vision, and on Instagram at Indigenous Vision Media. I hope you have a wonderful week.